This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to another episode of Draft Deeper here on the No Ceilings NBA podcast feed. I am Maxwell Baumbach. Again, unfortunately, scheduling did not work out in our favor, and we do not have Nathan Grubel with us yet again, but he's still kicking. He's doing a lot of work for the site nevertheless. And I am joined by none other than Stephen Gillespie. Stephen, how are you doing today?
Maxwell, man, I am doing awesome. We're going to talk about it more, but it's a pretty bittersweet episode. I'm excited to dive into the players that we have on deck. Wish Nathan could be here, but, you know, life is hitting us all at different angles at the same time. Yes. So yeah. It's, you know, we're recording this leading off into Mother's Day weekend. So happy Mother's Day to all the moms that are out there of just the No Ceilings moms. Shout out to them. Shout out to the prospects moms, just moms in general. Moms rock.
Yeah, it's a big, big weekend for moms. And also, yeah, because we are recording this before the weekend, if any of these players commit a major crime or if they do something really bad between now and then, Steven can say, that's not one of my guys anymore. He gets to reserve that right. No, I don't think that's going to happen with any of these guys. But yeah, so this episode, Steven, unfortunately, is going to be coming up on a hiatus here from No Ceilings. So with that being the case, we got to do his guys. We got to do an episode on Steven's guys, his favorite players in the draft, guys that he thinks are, you know, undervalued, guys that he really likes and really enjoys watching. So, Steven, we're going to kick it off with your first guy on the list, Cam Whitmore. Yeah. Somebody that I'm very fond of, too. 6'7" forward from Villanova. Give us the rundown. Why is Cam Whitmore one of your guys?
Well, the biggest development in my affinity with Cam Whitmore is I have him fourth on my board now. Over a long time stalwart and favorite, Jairus Walker. And typical caveat that there's nothing wrong with Jairus Walker. Yep. Right? He's an absolutely tremendous, tremendous player. I'm just looking at upside now, Maxwell. Mm-hmm. And Jairus has an upside as well. I'm also acknowledging that. But what Cam Whitmore could be and what I believe he will be is pretty scary. Like, Maxwell, there's a potential that he could yield top two value in a redraft of this class. If, you know, unfortunately, if things don't go right for some players or things just go extra right for him, he is the type of player that if it hits, that's what every NBA team covets. You know, first off, he's measured what we would typically associate like anywhere from the 90s on star in an NBA team, right? Like he's 6'6", 6'7". I've been saying for a little while now, I have receipts if people are interested, but I've been saying that Cam Whitmore's athleticism is right up there with the Thompson twins. And since I've been saying that here recently, there have been a picture of him doing that 40-inch jump and he clears it. So that's pretty outstanding. Yeah. So he's athletic. And then we get into the Villanova situation, and I was on deep dives last week, so I won't hit every major talking point, you know, just encourage the listeners to go back and listen. But I just look at the things that he does well, right? Like he moves and cuts well. If he's a bad shooter shooting 34-35%, then if he improves, like that's going to be scary. But even though he's a middling three-point shooter, he's showing at least that you got to respect him. And then that athleticism, that size, the creativity off of the bounce to be able to attack the paint, the unique blend that he has in this class of style and grace is pretty impeccable. And then we start looking at the defense, which is where I think that he's going to earn a lot of his value whenever we start seeing him in the NBA, is that athleticism, everything that he uses it for on the offensive end, defensively, he looks like he's going to be some type of force, a potential 2-4 defender in the NBA, depending on the one. He might be able to even, you know, provide switch value onto some ones, because of his length and athleticism and just smart gambles. You know, he has intelligent hands when he's on the ball. I was talking with Nick about this on Deep Dives, and Torrey Eason, I liked him as a defender, but there was a lot of like pressing and a lot of gambling.
Yeah, yeah.
Where if you look at Cam Whitmore and his steals numbers, they're pretty favorable, but he plays fundamental defense. So like he just gets the ball handler in positions to where they're uncomfortable. A lot of times he pokes the ball loose. So if we're not even crediting him with steals, you know, deflections, that's going to be a big stat for him in the NBA. And the last thing I want to touch on with Cam Whitmore Maxwell, I even wrote about this on my piece over at NoCeilingsNBA.com. It's 100% free. You all should go check it out. Is that the passing numbers are like the big focal point, the talking point with him. And while people could point at the passing numbers and say they're not good, I would say, hey, you're right. But let's look at the why behind that. And so I dove into Villanova's passing numbers, and I realized that like out of most D1 colleges that Villanova's passing was like bottom third easily. Like I didn't get the exact percentage because, you know, Arkansas math, whatever, but it's not good. And so it's so not good that it was actually worse than South Carolina. So when we're looking at GG Jackson and those assist numbers, like it makes sense why they're not great because the team wasn't great at passing. Well, Villanova was actually worse than that. And also shout out to Bryce Sensabaugh because Ohio State was also in that lower tier of low ball movement teams. Mm-hmm. And the other thing on top of the low ball movement numbers is that the turnover percentage for Whitmore is actually pretty respectable. So if you consider low passing IQ team, still has favorable decision-making numbers in his favor, I think that that projects well moving forward in the NBA where spacing and ball movement is going to be at a premium around him. So I think in the right ecosystem, that passing number is actually going to get a lot better.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm going to kind of go through piece by piece and just kind of touch on the big things that you hit on. So the first thing that you touch on is obviously the athleticism. And I think that's like big. This is a guy who has, who's not only like athletic, because I think people think athletic and I feel like a lot of times people are like, this guy's athletic, that guy's athletic. And they don't really go into like what that means. And Cam Whitmore is like the true athletic full package, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's not just, he does jump really high. He does have a great first step, but he's also like very strong. He's really powerful. He gets downhill with a fury. Like he is every type of athleticism you could want.
Change of direction.
Lateral movement, change of direction. Exactly. Like it's all there. So just coming in, like, with what he showed is an on-ball defender, he's going to come in and be able to cover his man. Yep. And like you said too, like, yeah, like 2 through 4, I think that's all on the table eventually. And like, I don't think he's going to get like totally smoked by ones. Like I would never be like,
right,
hey, go cover like John Morant. Like that's not how a team's going to use him. But if he does have to get switched onto that, like those smaller players, he's going to be fine. Like he'll do well. But yeah, like athletically it's all there. I think the shot is better than the percentage. And I think
I do too.
That is a function of how many he took more threes off the dribble than he did off the catch. And like, if you told me that going into the year, I'd be like, what on earth? Like, how did that happen? And the answer is this Villanova team is pretty bad.
Exactly.
But
his spot up numbers are good too.
That's the thing. He made 40% of his catch and shoot threes. And most of them were guarded. He was not a guy who was getting left open. Only 13 of those 45 catch and shoots were unguarded. So this is a guy who did not have an easy shot diet from three and took a good amount of them. I really buy the shot. I also really buy his downhill game because even against like strong players, he can plow through them. He can get to the basket. I don't like his pull-up stuff. Like he was actually better at pull-up threes than he was at pull-up twos. Like the middle part of the court, just like it was before the season, it's not there for him yet, but I think similar to what we talked about with Jaden Ivey last year, it's kind of not there because it's never had to be there. Mm-hmm. Like Jaden Ivey was never in a position where it's like, well, you get stuck in the mid range, you got to pull up. Like that, no, like he could just make threes or he would get where he wanted. So it was not like, oh, I like he hasn't spent a lot of game reps on that shot because it's just not something that he runs into. He gets to the rim a good amount. And when he does, he finishes there really well, because like we said, he can jump really high. He can jump really far and he's a grown man. So I love the offensive, like, so I think this at its core, if nothing else comes along, we have a guy who is a tremendous athlete in every sense, who can knock down open shots, attack the rim and finish. Like he's going to, he's going to survive. Like, I think the bust rate on Cam Whitmore is exceptionally low.
I agree. I think the floor is a lot higher than what he's given credit for.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people focus on the assist percentage, which, like, to be clear, 6.4 assist percentage is like true danger zone. Like, that is very uncommon. And a lot of the guys that do have those numbers historically are guys that have busted, but I don't think that's Cam. I think Cam is like so much better physically than those guys. And even if he is just like a guy who catches and shoots and attacks the rim of defense, he's still going to be a pretty damn useful NBA player because he is so good at all of those things.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to come too, because like, he's able to get where he wants. And I think he's going to get better, like, just recognizing basic things and making teams pay. And I actually thought he'd had some flashes of that prior to college, as far as just like, oh, here comes the help defender, here's a little interior dish, like that kind of stuff. I don't think went away. I think it was just Villanova was weird.
Yeah, Villanova was weird. He suffered a hand injury. And Maxwell, I talked with Nick about this, you know, I'd love to get your thoughts on it, even if it's only just briefly, but suffered a hand injury, which typically doesn't have as total impact on your ability to be on a basketball court as like a lower body injury, but the staying power of that injury, I'm very curious, right? Because he suffered low 3-point shooting towards the beginning of the year. He also didn't have a real shot at beefing those numbers up against lower level of competition because his debut game was against Oklahoma. And even when he played, I touched on this in the article, he had a minutes percentage in games played of like 52%, right? So like, Coach Neptune wasn't like, hey, let's just let our guy cook, you know, let's make this highly touted, like highest recruited player that we've had in forever for Villanova program. He's going to still have to earn his way up. Now, there's negativity to that, obviously, especially if we're evaluating a prospect in terms of like, okay, he's not a high usage guy, right? But if you consider like the character stuff that comes along with that, right? Like,
My bad. So, accidentally hit the ad button, but we're good.
It's okay. I needed a break. I was getting too hyped up.
You mentioned the fit at Villanova.
Yeah. So the fit at Villanova, he was coached like any other player on Villanova, 100%. which is great, right? Because on top of that, I don't remember hearing any character issues, like any like grumblings or anything about that on his role. If he could go on the court, Maxwell, and get like two steals on consecutive possessions and hit a three, but he makes one bad, you know, assignment coverage. He gets yanked out of the game just like anybody else, right? So the minutes percentage, I see a negative side of that, but also see a very positive side, because if you're going to get a guy who you believe is a star player, the highest success rate of star players are those who you get that same amount of buy-in from them to where, okay, if this is a guy that I'm going to be invested in, we want him to be a face of the franchise. Even if he's not the face, he can be a face. And if this guy is coachable and if this guy buys into the system, that gives zero excuses for anybody else on the team. Like, we see players succeed and thrive, and teams, franchise organizations will thrive when the faces of their team do exactly what we saw Cam Whitmore do when he was one of the top prospects in his respective class. He struggled with injuries. He struggled with playing time, role, responsibility, but production was there, and the flashes are all still significant enough to suggest that he's still a top five talent. That's why I have him fourth. It's just, that's all character stuff on top of that NBA front offices are going to eat up whenever they get a chance to interview Cam.
For sure. Yeah. And I think it's going to come down to, in terms of just his long-term memory or projection, like, does the vision get better? Like, can he avoid some of the tunnel vision stuff? And then can he get his handle a little bit better so that he can break guys down on an island a little bit more? Because right now it doesn't seem like he has a ton of counters, but it's like the Jaden Ivey conundrum is just like what I'm going to call it going forward, where it's like, when you get where you want, like, of course, that's not going to be a more developed aspect of your game. Whereas we see like a Trey Alexander, for example, a guy who has a million counters, but he's also like way less athletic than Cam Whitmore. So it's like, this is how you have to play.
It's a necessity.
Like, yes, right? Exactly.
Like, could you please stop driving straight to the basket and getting buckets whenever you want, so we can make sure that you have, you know, a good up and under.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Why is Cam Whitmore not using a hostage dribble more often? Like, why? like these are the things that just, yeah, he doesn't have to do. So, yeah, so we both like Cam Whitmore, number four on your board. Any closing thoughts on Cam Whitmore? Because I think we covered like the big positives and the big criticisms.
Right. Yeah, I've written about him over at NoSoonNBA.com.
If you haven't already.
And I've spoke with Nick about it on Deep Dives. I'm talking about it now because I'm just a big fan. I was a big fan coming in, dude. Like at one point, could he challenge Scoot and Victor Wembanyama coming into the year? Like I was silly enough to think that, and then those two just quickly knocked him down. And then the emergence of Brandon Miller. And then again, for the longest time, I was like, Jairus Walker is really good. But going back and contextualizing the season for Cam, I would highly encourage anybody to do that, because if you can go back and just watch him and see everything that he went through on that team personally as well, like he has the tools to be a star level player. And if you don't get a top three pick in this year's draft class and you just so happen to land at number four, there's still a star on the board waiting for you there.
Yeah, I do think to your point too, like if you follow like the course of the season, like we were knocking him for some of the defensive stuff earlier in the year. Like he'd get a little stand and watch heavy. And like, I still think he has more to offer as like a weak side rim protector. Like I think that's something that could come along. But yeah, like he was sliding all over the place. He was getting cooked by guards in big moments. And I'm like, by the end of the year, like, yeah, he was just doing phenomenal on that end. So that does it for the Cam Whitmore talk. We've got a couple more big names coming up. We got some sleepers coming up. So stay tuned. We're going to be right back after the ad break.
Thunderpants!
What are you laughing at?
Laffy Taffy. They have a funny joke on every wrapper, and I love how fruity they are. Banana's my favorite. Want one?
Sure. So smooth and creamy.
I like to eat them after school and after dinner and after...
Whenever you need a good LOL?
Yeah! So, here's the joke. What do clouds wear under their shorts?
Thunderpants! That is good!
Laffy Taffy. Deliciously funny. Head to LaffyTaffy.com to shop now.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
All right, we are back, and next up on the docket is a guy that, to your credit, you were very early on this guy, and it was one of those things where early season is like silly season. Like every year they got pop up, and it's the non-con schedule. Teams are playing a lot of bad teams, and it's hard to know what's what. But you saw this guy early in the year, you identified him, you stuck with him, and now he is kind of the talk of the town, and that is UCF's Taylor Hendricks, a 6'9 freshman. Give us the rundown of Taylor Hendricks. What do you like, and where is he on your board?
Yeah, so I wrote about him way early in the year. I think it was like January to February time frame. I don't have the actual date committed to memory, but it was pretty early on in the cycle. And
even before that, you were bringing him up a lot. It's like a guy like early in, like you were one of the first people I remember mentioning, at least to me, bringing him up as a guy who was kind of exceeding expectations and was going to be a real guy.
Well, and I appreciate that, because I know that you pull from a lot of different areas. So like to me, it means something that you're saying that I'm one of the first people, because I know that that's a significant milestone in the draft space.
Yeah.
But, I like him a lot for obvious reasons, for the same reasons that everybody else is talking about him now. You mentioned the height, 6'9", shoots the cover off of the ball with ease. I think that the form could be cleaned up a little bit, but it's working like tremendously well right now. And then the weak side rim protection that he offers. Like the article that I wrote about him was that he's tailor-made for the NBA, just play off of his first name. Obviously, I'm not super creative here, but he is tailor-made for the NBA, in the fact that I think a lot of teams now are experimenting with what I'm calling like modernized twin tower lineups, where you want size all over the floor, right? Like look at what Cleveland's doing. Look at what Orlando's doing now, Los Angeles. But when I wrote about him being you know, in Utah with Jared Vanderbilt, Lauri Markkanen, Kelly Olynyk, so on and so forth, right? Like, teams want length everywhere. And if you have ball handlers on your team that are also big, like Apollo Banchero, Franz Wagner, Evan Mobley can do a little bit of creation. I think that that's going to be expanded in his game. Lauri Markkanen, from what we saw in Utah, that positional versatility that those jumbo creator, initiator, score type players have, it opens the floor up for other big men who can space the floor and have weak side rim protection a la Taylor Hendricks. And that's what I think that he's going to offer to any NBA team that's fortunate enough to draft him this year. When I wrote about him like 4 months ago, I was like, okay, maybe he's going to be a rotational guy for a middle to late first round team. But he just progressively got better all throughout the season. Like, he had a, you know, Clash of the Titans battle with Drew Pember early on in the season. And if you look at that as like a marker saying like, okay, like what do we look for in terms of a successful season for these prospects? Just look at the path that both of those prospects went on, where we were like, who's the better prospect between Drew Pember and Taylor Hendricks?
Yeah.
Obviously, Taylor has stayed the course, and he's gotten better throughout the year too, with like rebounding, screening. There's people that like the flashes of playmaking and the decision-making that he has. I had the opportunity to interview him whenever he played ECU in Orlando for the game that I was able to catch. And he already knows what the next step in his development is, and that's his ball handling ability. But Maxwell, why I like him so much is that he's got an entry level skill set of 3-and-D. And
yeah,
we all know how valuable that is, especially for a player of his age and size.
That to me is like the icing on the cake, right? Like, there's a lot of quote unquote 3-and-D guys, a lot of guys who get that 3-and-D label, and like, they're barely 3-and-D. Like, they are barely one or the other. Like, there's always like one where it's like, yeah, he's 3-and-D. And it's like, he's 34% from three. You know what I mean? Yeah. There's a lot of guys like that.
Could be.
Taylor Hendricks is legit. He is a guy who, yeah, blocked 1.7 shots, 0.9 steals, and almost 40% from three. He's a 6'9" freshman who can move. So, yeah, he is very, very exciting. I agree with a lot of what you said there. I think that just in terms of like his point A to point B was really great. Like, you mentioned the matchup with Drew Pember earlier in the year. And then like, look at some of these games. Like, I was talking to Evan earlier in the week about like how he looked in games against like Jairus Walker too later in the year, where it's like, man, like again, like no,
we thought he was going to get eaten alive whenever he started that conference gameplay. And like early on in the season, like it was against Jairus Walker, and like, he held his own, like
he did really well.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, like again, like no disrespect to Drew Pember. I love Drew Pember, but Drew Pember is also like a 4-year senior who's going back for a grad year because partially because like ESPN had him in the '80s, right? Like, I like Drew Pember a lot. I had him in my top 60 at different points. But yeah, like he probably wasn't going to get drafted. And then you see him against a guy like Jairus, who's probably a top 10 pick later in the year. And it's like, oh man, like this is sustaining itself. It's a real testament to what he was able to do. Love the high release on the shot.
Yes.
I too am bullish on the playmaking. Like, I know that is again, like assist rate, nothing crazy, whatever, but I think at the very least he knows where everyone on the court is, and he makes very quick decisions. The ball doesn't stick with Taylor Hendricks. And if you're not going to be like a passer playmaker, I think that is like exactly the baseline I want to see. It's just like, do you know where your teammates are? Do you move the ball quickly? Because that's another knock on Cam Whitmore, right? Is that like a lot of times he gets the ball and he surveys, and that's not present with Taylor Hendricks. He gets it and he kicks it, or he's shooting, or he's attacking. On the handle, I don't think it's like anything great. Again, he's not a guy who's gonna like break people down off the dribble, but I do like how he gets low with the ball. I think that he knows like functionally how to attack a closeout, at least in the very basic sense. My hangups with him are not things I'm like ultra worried about. So, the frame, like it's pretty narrow right now. Like, but again, he's a young player who is tall, so that is very normal. And he struggled a little bit as an interior finisher, which again, I don't really worry about. So interior finishing, is something that doesn't really tend to come around very often, but the guys that do are generally big athletes. Yep. So it's like, that's Taylor Hendricks. So, I've like been flirting with putting him 6 on my board, honestly, just because I think that the savvy is there, the defense is there, the movement and the shooting is really there. And it's just hard to find shooters that size. And I thought his defensive technique throughout the year got better and better when it came to just guarding the ball. So yeah, I'm a big fan of Taylor Hendricks. What would you say is your biggest concern in like worst case scenario? What are we looking at with Taylor Hendricks? Because again, it just feels like a really kind of high floor guy.
Yeah.
What would be if it goes quote unquote wrong for Taylor Hendricks, what do you think causes it to go wrong?
I'm sorry, I get the names mixed up, but who's the McDaniels in Philly? Is it Jaden or Jalen?
That's Jalen. Yeah, Jalen is, yeah.
Yeah, I think Philly McDaniels is kind of like low end outcome, who is playing playoff basketball for Philadelphia right now. So not the worst floor in the NBA.
Yeah, if you can be Jalen McDaniels, that's great. I'm sorry, right. I think I might have gotten them messed up. It's Jalen is Philly, Jaden Minnesota.
Yeah, so Jalen is
is the one that you were saying is the floor.
Jalen, yes, Philadelphia, sorry. McDaniel. No, it's all good. It's all good.
I think I got it right. I don't even know. I'm I wrote about Jalen McDaniels today for the piece I have coming out next week. I touched on him a little bit, but yeah, the McDaniels thing is just, I still get them mixed up. And like, they're not even the same age. It's embarrassing that
it is right. That, but it is what it is. They're super close. It's a letter off. They're similar builds. But the point here is that like, even if he's still Philadelphia McDaniels, that he's not even done developing yet, right? Like he's still finding consistent playing time. He's played on a bunch of different types of rosters with a bunch of different types of star players, and he's still finding rotational minutes on a playoff team, right? Mm-hmm. So even if he's not, that's not what you're looking to take at number six, but if all else fails, you're still getting like a professional grade, multifaceted, versatile forward in the NBA.
That's right. Yeah. I kind of like that comp too, because like McDaniels, yeah, he's a guy who can guard up and down really well. He's very big. He is a very good free throw shooter. And like, he just has ways that like his offensive usage isn't anything crazy, right? Like it's generally spotting up. It's running the floor. It's like cutting here and there. And that's it. Like he's a guy who doesn't have the ball very much, kind of moves on from it quickly when he doesn't have it. Handle isn't anything crazy, but his role is very, very simplified and straightforward. And in Philly too, McDaniels is also like not been the best finisher either. Like that's been something that's kind of popped up for him, which again, like that's like what we're saying. Like if Taylor Hendricks doesn't get any better, like he still kind of looks like that. And that's a very useful player to have. Nevertheless, like there's a reason that the Sixers went out and acquired Jalen McDaniels, and it's because he's a good NBA player.
And if we're redrafting his class, he's a lottery player, right? So if you just draft a lottery level talent at number six, like, that's not really even bust. You know what I mean? Like, even if like absolute, but let's do best case now, Maxwell, that we got excited on the floor.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, cause I think the ceiling is like really exciting. Cause we're talking about like
Jaden McDaniels, Jared Vanderbilt. Like we're starting to get to like,
but with a stroke, like a real stroke. Like that's the guy I want.
Yeah. And now we're starting to get to like, okay, like if you could draft those guys in their draft classes, they're probably going like at that 6 to 10 range, which is where I think a lot of people are at now with Taylor Hendricks, right? So I think that you're getting a very useful and effective basketball player. Like if we're talking Jared Vanderbilt, like he's probably the most important defensive player on the Los Angeles Lakers right now, not named Anthony Davis, right? So he's picking up the toughest assignments. And the thing about those two is like, their development's not even done yet either. They're still pretty young players and figuring out their roles and things like that on their team. So for Taylor, I have him top 10. I'm still trying to nail down whether I want him 7 to 10. I don't know if I can get him as high up as 6, but I think I'm more comfortable in that 8 to 10 range, because although the ceiling might not be as high with him as it is like the Thompsons, the floor is safer. Where the Thompsons, their ceiling is a little higher, but their floor might be a little bit more volatile.
Yeah.
It's still trying to figure out that weird range within the top 10, but certainly a top 10 player could be as high as like a top 7 player by the time my board is done.
Yeah, I think I buy the passing stuff more than a lot of people. Like I really think the finishing is going to come around, and I do think he's a really smart player. And like I just feel like the flaws that he has are things that can be developed really easily. Mm-hmm. And the stuff that is good is stuff that, like, it's hard to catch up to.
Yeah, his flaws, yeah, they're going to get better as he puts on, like, the grown man NBA,
yeah,
strength. Totally. Like, that's going to help the rebounding, where he can get a little bit of out-muscled, mm-hmm, on the boards, but the technique is there. The screen setting is going to improve. You know, the slashing and absorbing contact is going to get better, which is going to help that finishing number. So a lot of it kind of mirrors what everyone was talking about with Brandon Miller earlier on, mm-hmm, in the season, where, like, the strength can only get so much better throughout the season whenever all you're doing is running throughout the year. Like, you're a fitness guy.
Season. Yeah. And when, like, NBA players always say, like, you put on muscle and then you lose it during the year because, like, you're not in the weight room the same way that you can be during, yeah, the off season. Like, you're traveling, you're playing, you're running all around. Like, it's pretty standard for guys to slim down during the year.
Yep. Absolutely.
So up next, we have another guy that I also really like. I feel like there's a lot of overlap. These next two are, like, a little different. I kind of want to get your takes on them because I like them a lot. I just don't, they're not my guys.
Sure.
Another guy that I like quite a bit. You like him more than I do at this point, though. And that's why he is one of your guys. Jalen Hood-Schifino, a 6'6" freshman from Indiana. Jumbo point guard. Just, yep, one of those kind of player types that we're seeing more and more. Give us a rundown on JHS and why you like him.
Yeah, so you were one of the people, like, before the season even kicked off, that's like, hey, Jalen Hood-Schifino is probably going to be a guy that we need to remember coming in. I know Corey was really big on him coming into the season as well. And that's where, like, he was, like, a no ceilings favorite before, like, we're hipster, you know, before, yeah, it was cool, you know, mm-hmm, we were really big on JHS. And at one point in the season, we were, like, one of the few reputable draft outlets out there that were still ranking him. And we were just kind of, like, looking, yeah, at each other, like,
next year guy,
what happened? Like, what's going on? Is there something that we need to know? Now he's still, like, a wide ranging prospect. Right. And I think that where you're saying is, like, you like him, just not as much as me. I'm not sitting here saying, like, I love him more, so everybody else is out on him or anything like, yeah, that. Yeah, like, yeah, I totally get it. My thing with him, though, is, like, something Corey talked about a lot referring to Trayce Jackson-Davis is that, look, Coach Woodson is a phenomenal coach. He's got NBA pedigree, NBA background, very knowledgeable basketball coach and former player. That system that he runs in Indiana is pretty archaic, right? Which means that the way that JHS is being utilized as a floor general is not necessarily the way that he will be used in the NBA. But he was still able to demonstrate a high sense of feel operating in the pick and roll. That just so happens to be the play set that he's probably going to be running the most whenever he gets to the NBA. He's measuring at about 6'5", 6'6". Maxwell, you help me out if you got a more up-to-date measurement.
Yeah, I know. I don't know the height, but I know that ESPN in one of their articles listed him as having a 6'10 wingspan at one point.
Which
so
is stupid.
I would assume they have the real measurement. So I have no reason to doubt a measurement reported by Gavoni. It's not like some dude on Twitter being like, I heard it's 6'10". Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's from a very good source. So yeah, probably 6'5", 6'6", 6'10 wingspan.
Yeah, which is all the rage when you're considering, like, drafting a lead guard in the NBA now, right? And the high sense of feel that he has, like, the ability to snake his way into the lane. Guys that play with, like, a unique pace and cadence to their game typically translate pretty well to the NBA because it's the reason that they look different is because they are. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, the way that they're going to perform is going to be at a different level to other players. So when we're looking at JHS operating in an archaic system, playing second fiddle to, and rightfully so, to Trayce Jackson-Davis, another high usage guy. So we're getting to see how he looks operating in the pick and roll and operating next to another ball dominant player. So you don't have to worry about putting him into a spot where, well, is he going to fit with the star player? Like, how are they going to overlap? Is he going to be redundant? He's not, right? He's showing that the shot, it looks like it's going to be a pretty good weapon, right? That mid-range jumper is nasty. His highs, Nathan has pounded this, you know, into our listeners. I'm still going to do it. His highs are as high as anybody else's highs in this entire draft class. And that means something when we're talking about projecting prospects forwards, because, yep, you want to buy their strengths and then how can they show up the weaknesses?
Mm-hmm.
I think with his unique pace, the offense is there. I think the defense is going to be there too at his position, at least. Like, He's probably not going to be a defensive stopper, but he's going to be, I would imagine, like a net neutral defender at the next level, which has a lot of promise, right? And then, Maxwell, I'd be remiss if I didn't say player, and I say this all the time, players with his size and feel, like that intersection of those two things, the success rate is pretty solid in the NBA. And if you look at where guys like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Tyrese Halliburton were drafted in their respective draft classes, they're in that like 12 to 15 range. But when you redraft them, like does Shai go number one in his draft class now? Does Tyrese Halliburton, I had him number four in his draft class. That might have even been too low now that we're looking at that draft class now. I just think that we have a recent history of how these guys look coming into their drafts and where retroactively they get selected. And he has a lot of commonality with those types of players.
Yeah. So JHS is a big like heart versus brain kind of debate for me at times too, where like you watch the film and like, I just love his game. Like everything he does is very aesthetically pleasing. It's very pretty. He's very clearly processing the game at a high level. He thinks the game well. He's kind of that coach on the floor type of guy on offense. He knows where everybody is. He has like high turnover numbers, but then like at one point during the year, I looked through his turnovers and it was all like, oh, he threw like a good pass to a guy who wasn't ready for it. Or like he delivered the ball in an interesting angle and like the player bobbled it because they didn't anticipate it coming that way. Like a lot of it was stuff where I'm just like, oh, that's like not his fault. Where it gets tricky, I think, with him is projecting the shot. So this is like part of the reason I was really in on him preseason is I think like in high school, the 3-point percentage was like dismal. It was like 18%. And that was, we were working with Inset at the time. So we did not have the level of data that we have on guys now. So that was a very small sample. But it was a really bad percentage based on the numbers that we had. He goes on to college and he shoots 33% from three, which if you told me that, I'd been like, first rounder. And I still first round guy.
Of course.
But the way he went about it was very odd. So the pull up two is still deadly for like 42.4% on pull up twos, which is like star stuff. 38.8 on threes off the dribble, which is stellar, especially if you're going to be a pick and roll ball handler, because like kind of forces guys to have to come over the top. But 26.5% on catch and shoot threes, and like not a great free throw shooter. So like, or no, he was 77%. He was good there this year. So there's been like real year over year growth, but at the same time, it's still like, I'm not sure what the off ball role looks like at this stage. Like I love him as a playmaker. Trust him. I think he makes really good decisions. What do you view him doing off the ball on an NBA floor?
So,
or do you just think the shot gets there because it like everything kind of says it will?
I think the shot gets there. And here's the thing, like between Shai and Tyrese, like Tyrese coming into the NBA, his shot looked weird, but it went in, right? It was efficient. We were just like, oh, okay, like is this sustainable? Shai didn't really have like a pretty three coming in. And that's like the biggest thing holding him back, like truth be told, from being like a clear-cut star in the NBA is he's one, he doesn't shoot volume, and two, the efficiency kind of wax and wanes, right? But the way that they process the game, the way that they can recognize open spots on the floor away from the ball, because they see it when they have the ball in their hands and they understand where other people are supposed to be when I have the ball, I just need to put myself in that spot, right? Like some of the and if we talk him down to like just a role player status.
Sorry, the second time I've accidentally hit a button that I should not have tonight.
It's all good. If we talk about him just like in a role player role, like something that I've talked about with Chris Murray is that why I think he's going to be a good role player is because he's been the star.
And the thing
from the start of the role player is like when I'm the star, I know where I want the ball and I know where I want people to be. When I'm the role player, I'm successful because I know what that guy wants for me because I wanted it from other people. I think JHS can do that off the ball because he knows where he wants people to be when he has the ball in his hands. Now he just has to put himself in that other spot. And I think that the jumper is going to be efficient. And he's like not like contact adverse at all. Like he has no problem mixing it up in the paint. So I think that that helps him in a slashing ability. It's just that the role that we saw him in, like, this condensed version at Indiana, I don't know if that's enough to say that I don't trust him anywhere else. You know what I mean? Because he's a very cerebral, smart player. And just like what we saw from Shea when he was operating in Oklahoma City with Dennis Schroeder and Chris Paul, and just like we saw with Tyrese Halliburton when he's operating in Sacramento with guys like De'Aaron Fox and Davion Mitchell, they can play with multiple guards because they're just intelligent players and they have the length that actually holds up to being like a multi-positional player away from the ball. But I think that the biggest bang for your buck is going to be to put the ball in his hands and let him become like this big initiator with the ball. And because he can do that, then you can put him in these DHO sets where you get him a full head of steam, getting a handoff from a big man and attacking the basket, or these, you know, guard to guard pick and rolls that the NBA is starting to run a lot now because of his size. Like, maybe you hunt the smaller defensive assignment. You know what I mean? Like, there's ways that you can get creative with a guy like this just because of how intelligent he is and how he just consistently finds a way to get to where he wants to on the court. There's just so much of a foundation there that he could end up being like one of these like ultimate like redraft guys within his class.
Yeah. So the last thing I want to touch on with him, and I just want to pull up like the updated numbers. So Synergy during his time at Montverde, they list his 3-point percentage at 26.5. He took 27 off the dribble and only made 4, and made 35% of his threes off the catch. So he was better off the catch and worse off the dribble. Now he's good off the dribble, bad off the catch. So these are the fun things that they get to keep you up at night when this is what you do. So the other concern with him, and this is one that goes back to high school, is his rim finishing. Struggles there, doesn't really pressure the rim a ton, very content to pull up, which is a good shot for him, but more of a pull-up guy than a get all the way to the rim collapse the defense guy. What do you make of that, and like, is it a concern for you at all?
I mean, obviously it's a concern. Like, the numbers aren't there is something that kind of reared its head, but again, the archaic system in Indiana, there's at least two bodies like really close to the basket, so if you're walking into a situation where there's at least 4 people, you know, offense and defense, and then you're bringing you yourself and your guy, like, that's going to be something that is obviously going to make your life more difficult. So it makes sense why he would stop, you know, on a dime and rise up against people, because he has the height and length to be able to do so. So I don't know. I just think that with a more open court, a more functional NBA, obviously NBA level offense in the NBA, but something that he'll be able to play in a more open system, I think that will help him out a lot, because just by virtue of there being less bodies occupying the paint with him, the finishing numbers should theoretically improve. But again, that's like more of the projection aspect and me buying into the fact that he gets to his spot so easily. I don't know why that would change with more space in front of him at the next level.
For sure. For sure. I think that's all fair. We're going to throw it to one more ad, then we're going to get Steven's last two guys lower down on the board. And I think guys that a lot of people may not have paid as close attention to, just because their visibility was different than these first three guys that were kind of college stars. So it should be really fun. So stay tuned with us. We're going to take a brief ad break and come back with Steven's last two guys.
This episode is brought to you by Bai. It's Wonder Water. What makes Bai so great? It's simple. From raspberry lemon lime by Sydney Sweeney to Zambia Bing cherry and Palavo pineapple mango, Bai has antioxidants, electrolytes, and no artificial sweeteners. So for flavorful hydration, choose Bai. It's Wonder Water. Learn more about Bai and discover all of the exotic, bold flavors at drinkbai.com.
All right, perfect. So, Steven, two guys to go. Another guy that you were early on that you kind of spotted out, wrote about him, even though maybe he wasn't on people's radars. Is this your guy at this point? Bobby Clinton from Wake Forest. Bobby is a very interesting player. He is 6'10", does a little bit of everything. Give people the rundown on his game and kind of what you're seeing in him, and let people know where you have him too.
Well, I got to give a shout out to Evan and Corey at the team, because I know that they had tweeted about him, talked about him. And that was kind of like the prelude for my Bobby Klempman piece, was that like the idea of prospect sharing, like saying, hey, like, this is a really cool player, you should check him out and let me know what you think so we can, you know, both grow as evaluators and things like that. That's where I found Bobby, out of Wake Forest. And I had an opportunity to actually interview him for that article, and just being able to listen to him, man. Like, first off, I'll tell anybody who asked me about Bobby is like, he's the sweetest kid I've ever talked to. Like, if I had a daughter his age, like, he could marry my daughter. It wouldn't bother me at all. His story is interesting. He calls himself the Swede Freak, which is what I titled the article. And, you know, grew up in Malmo, Sweden, played for the Swedish national team, dominated, moved to, you know, play ball at Link Academy, which is in the heartland of America. So You're moving from Sweden to the Midwest, playing basketball with Grady Dick and Mark Mitchell on the and other future prospects that we're going to be talking about next year. Played with all those guys, showed a lot of versatility for Link, and then moved to Wake Forest, which is located in North Carolina. So a lot of movement, right? So as he's like geographically moving, he's experiencing a growth spurt and adding muscle to his frame, right? So I say all of that because everybody who's listening to this and is looking him up on College Basketball Reference or whatever, and is like, oh, he averages blah, 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 and blah, 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 and blah, 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 and his percentages and all this other stuff. I get it, right? The thing with him is, like, he is the ultimate, like, hypothetical player to me in this draft, where if you look at a player who's 6'10", who's experiencing, like, this major growth spurt, who has experience carrying a team and on the national scale against, like, the world's best competition within his age group, dominating, moving to play and learn American-style basketball, because that's where he's going to make money, is in the NBA, obviously, in America. So he's learning a completely different style of play, growing into his body, playing on a very senior-laden team in Wake Forest, and an opportunity just isn't, like, given to him. He has to earn it. And he's playing a role, right? So all of that to say this, that Maxwell, at the end of the day, he is a 6'10 guy who can shoot, who can weak side for rim protect, who has some ball handling and passing flashes. The reason he calls himself the Swede Freak is because he is obviously a fan of Giannis Antetokounmpo, and they share actually some pretty similar, like, characteristics on the floor that makes you wonder, even if it's only momentarily, like, is that a little bit of Giannis Antetokounmpo in his game? And that is why this guy has been invited to go to the big boy.
Big combine. Yep.
Big combine, which indicates that NBA front offices are obviously very interested in this guy, because he's such a hypothetical player that the team that might pick him is like, we might want to invest in this guy, because long-term he could yield some crazy, nasty, scary results because of all the potential that is wrapped up in that frame.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a very good way of putting it. And yeah, should I just, like, stop calling it, like, the big combine? I feel like I keep referring to the big combine, like, on podcasts and on the site, and I'm just like, no one's told me that that's wrong yet. So I'm going to keep calling it the big combine. But,
well, that's the one where you're going to get the most hours. It's like, you know, let's keep it wrestling.
It's the one that, yeah.
They call WWE New York, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's kind of the same vibe.
Yeah. So yeah, Klempman is super intriguing, right? Because on paper, like you said, not super productive. Didn't play a massive role on the team, barely played over half their minutes. But you watch the games, especially later in the season, it's like, oh man, this guy was, like, really figuring some stuff out. Like, He really seemed to get more and more comfortable. He had some really big games later in the year. He starts a couple games, and it just feels like the baseline stuff is pretty good too. Like, the fact that he is 6'10", can move how he can, yes, and it's already like a 37-ish% 3-point shooter. It's like, that's a really good starting point for a guy who very much knows how to play the game of basketball. Like, it's not like, okay, well, he's 6'10" and he can move and he shot 37% from three, but he's kind of a mess. He doesn't really know what he's doing out there. Yep. Like, if that was the case, it'd be like, all right, well, I'll consider it, but I'm not excited about it. Or with Klempman, it's like, okay, he's doing all that stuff, and like he's just a really intelligent player on the court. He really sees the game well. I'm I'm really interested in Clintman, and he's a guy where like I need to do more film work just because I had sort of anticipated him being a next year guy.
Yep.
But as the year went on, like it was a guy where it's like, well, maybe. And then like I snuck in more and more film. Late growth spurt guys, really good track record in recent years. Jalen Williams, Trey Murphy. Lot of, for whatever reason, just seems to be something that has some real carryover to it. Even Leonard Miller is a growth spurt guy. With Clintman, I think the mobility is real deal. And I think if you were looking at his college stats, which again, like a lot, I think the biggest gripe that a lot of people would have is just like the numbers aren't big enough. But like if you look into the advanced ones, it's the assist percentage. But we know from that prior film that this is a guy who can really read the floor and pass. So could you kind of talk about that aspect of his game? Because I think it's probably something that if you're just kind of like leaping into draft season now and you're not like in the weeds following it year round, you probably don't know that like the passing was actually a really big selling point to him previously.
Right. And this is, again, is like, we talk about how players like Steph Curry has had like a predominant impact on the youth of basketball. Now, like coming into the NBA, like is given lanes for players like Trae Young. Well, Giannis, it's hard to be, you know, 6'10", 7 foot, but when you can be 6'10", 7 foot, and you're playing European basketball, where that's like the land of dribble pass shoot, right? Like everybody has to be able to have a at least a baseline level of all of those things. Well, Bobby has pretty significant ball handling, and you touched on the playmaking. If you go and watch I think it was the U18 for when he was with Sweden, like he was putting up double doubles, like really good assist numbers. I can't remember them off the top of my head, but I want to say they were in the neighborhood of like 4 or 5 assists per game. So like he's giving you like Draymond Green-esque stat lines, leading a team in Sweden. Right. And then coming over to Link, they still utilized him sort of like as a playmaker, right? Because they have Grady Dick who can shoot. They have Mark Mitchell, who's the athletic freak of nature on the team. Like Bobby in a kind of a limited role, like he could go off offensively, but he was more playing to the strengths of his teammates around him. And that is because of his European style play that he had growing up. And I think too, like with European players, they have that innate ability to find the open man like pretty regularly because it's beaten into them at such a young age. Bobby has an advanced read on the floor, right? And again, you're not going to see that number just as like a baseline level on College Basketball Reference or anything like that. Maxwell, you touched on the assist percentage. It just shows through, like he makes smart decisions with the ball. He has that positional wiggle and ball handling to him, which
he does.
Not everybody at that position that will defend him is just like suited to defend. It's really hard to be able to stop a player his size who has the handle and the court vision that he has.
So I did pull up the number. So it was the U20. So it's even like a bit older of an age group than like what like Cam Whitmore and Kalel Ware played against in the U18 Americas.
Yeah.
16 points per game, 10 rebounds per game, 5.1 assists per game to 2.9 turnovers. So the dude can like create when called upon. I'm like flirting with him first round, honestly.
Oh, I have him hard first. Like he's like mid-20s. Like,
yeah, I think that's where he's going to end up. I need to finish the film dive. I try not to like first round guys where I feel like I still need to do more research, but like I have him 29 right now.
Yeah.
Because it feels like if you are going to upside swing and if you're a team that has multiple first round picks, this is the guy to do it on because he has a ready made NBA skill as a passer. He has an NBA body and he has NBA size.
And he can shoot.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like for this combine piece, I've been doing a lot of research on like who had a big combine performance and stuck. And it was always guys that had size, feel, and could shoot. And like that's Clintman, and he's 6'10. So like he's not in this. I don't even know if he's going to play at the combine, but if he does, like those are the kind of guys that I like to bet on is when there's like one NBA skill, the NBA athleticism is there, and there's a general good level of feel. And I feel like that's Bobby Clintman. So,
and I have it on good authority that Bobby is going into this process like and can be picky. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He can come in and if it's like, hey, we really like you at 33 or at 35, he might say, that's not high enough. I'll go back next year and be a lottery pick. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like He
well,
has.
The thing is, like, you keep hearing how bad next year's draft is going to be, and it's like, well, I don't think the demand is going to go away for a high feel 6'10 guy that can shoot. Like, it's just not. It's just not going away.
No, and the way that this guy, again, the way that this guy interviews, the way that he moves on a basketball court and how intelligent he is, like, he's teams are going to fall in love with it. This guy might be, like, the Jalen Williams in terms of risers, right? Like, I think already undersell Jalen Williams, how productive he was coming into last year's draft cycle. But in terms of, like, late risers coming up at this portion of the draft cycle, like, Bobby is probably going to be that guy.
Yeah, yeah. So the last guy, another guy who I think could like also be in that mix because I am also like just getting around to finishing my deep dive on him is CD Sissoko from the G League Ignite. He is a really fascinating player. I'll kind of let you take the lead on him because I feel like everyone starts somewhere else with CD.
Yeah.
But he's 6'8". He played for the G League Ignite and I'm going to let you take it from there.
Yeah, so another Frenchman that is looking to get drafted in this year's draft class, not as unique as it once was. I like City a good bit coming into this draft cycle, and Nathan has a couple times been like, hey, your guy is doing great. And, like, as the season progressed, I'm not going to lie, like, my fandom of him, like, died down just because he had a rough start. And that probably should be expected moving forward with these G League prospects is, like, that's a big jump. Going from any sort of starting point into a system that is designed to like test your limits and boundaries as a prospect, not like other places where they would just like, hey, what are your strengths? Okay, let's showcase that and like not work on anything else, right? Like the G League is all about putting guys in positions to be uncomfortable. And we can go down a long list of players who did that, like Hardy, you know, who's now playing for the Mavericks. Mm-hmm. Sissoko struggled off the jump. And again, that should have been accounted for, but it wasn't on my part. So that's like a negative strike against me as an evaluator. But another European style play, like dribble, pass, shoot, like that had been there throughout the year for him, or at least the dribble and the passing. The shoot kind of progressed as the year went on. But again, bigger court, increased level of competition and athleticism, something else that should have been baked into my evaluation, but wasn't. But the thing about CD as the year progressed, and something that I've kind of always held true with him is like, I really liked looking at him, not as like a wing, but as like a four, you know, like as a forward. And I don't think that was like really like the popular analysis of him coming into the year.
No, you know? I think a lot of people saw him as like a wing guard. And I did too. And I'd actually pushed back on the air about him being a four at one point. But the more I watched the film, it's like, no, I think that's what he's going to be. And he was kind of out of position for Ignite because there's a lot of like Leonard and Mika and stuff like that, and like those guys grab all the rebounds, so he doesn't rebound like a four, but he played with like two of the top 15 rebounders in the G League this year, so it's like, well, he probably would, like I don't think he doesn't, like fundamentally he does the stuff that translates to good rebounding, so I do think that I think that's what he is.
Yeah, and I mean if we're looking at a guy who's What did Pooh, friend of the program, say he's 6'8", 220? Like
220 is what, Pooh says he's 220 now, which is, right. He looks it. Like, I don't doubt that he's 220. That is a large man.
Yeah, if Pooh says it, I'm buying it. You know, shout out to Pooh, friend of the program. But City at 6'8", 220, I think that gives him a lot of positional versatility, right? And I think that's the big selling point on him, first and foremost, is like, this guy defends his tail off. Like, the G League has done so great at making players like thirsty and hungry on both sides of the ball. You know,
they really do. That is something they don't get enough credit for, is like how hard these guys compete on defense.
Yeah. And it's like nothing is given to you in the G League either. Right. Which is why I think that you're starting to see them experiment more. And now with more programs starting to open up for G League, which I'm super excited about, I'm sure we'll talk about in future episodes, but the development in the G League, I think, has been criticized, but we also kind of forget how young that program really is. And the success rate that they're already having with the prospects that come through that program is tremendous. And it's players like CD who have improved in their shooting throughout the season, right? On a big court, like there's not going to be a transition in terms of like the floor dimensions for him. And he's already improving. But here's my thing, dude. There's so much for a lot of the reasons you like Leonard Miller's grab and go potential. I love that for City at the four, right? Like imagine him like on possession, like say he plays for Sacramento, right? Like that's something I think a lot of people are starting to really like at No Ceilings. Imagine like Sabonis isn't on the floor, right? He grab and goes, and you got guys like Fox at the position. You know, there's a lot of athletes, you know, Mitchell on this team. There's a lot of fun stuff that he can do in transition. And in the half court, operating DHO's hands off, slashing to the basket, operating as a screener, as a short roll playmaker in those pick and roll sets, I think is going to be something that he'll have a lot of value in at the NBA. He just has such a high feel for the game and an incredible motor on the defensive side of the ball. He'll rebound the heck out of it. I have no doubt about it. And then if he continues to show that that three-point shot is a real weapon, he is going to be one of these guys that, like, the redraft value on him is going to be through the roof.
That's, yeah, and that's, I think, where I have a hard time with him is that it seems like he's really close to being, like, just awesome because he's 19. He just played in a pro league. He shot 32% from three, which is not great. But if he's going to play a four, it could be worse. And he's already doing it from the NBA line at that age. So, like, that's a big, big feather in his cap. Really good playmaker. Really interesting defender in terms of the plays that he makes. And it's like, if he just becomes, like, a 35% three-point shooter, that's a playoff dude. Like, that is a dude you play in the playoffs with his size, his athleticism, and how he knows how to move the ball. It just feels like there's a little bit of connective tissue missing with him. Like, he's not the best finisher. It looks like he's a little uncoordinated at times. Like, his body just kind of seems to come unglued. And he grew up a point guard, and you can see it with the vision, but, like, his handle gets wildly loose at times when he gets downhill. And then, like, defensively, there's a lot of fouling. Adam Spinella pointed this out to me from the Box and One. Go check him out. He made a video on CD Sissoko, and like the last minute of it is just like, for one of his improvement areas, is like he gets involved in a lot of extracurriculars. Like, there's a lot of just totally unnecessary fouling and like beating and like temper, like Dylan Brooks kind of stuff that comes up in his game where it's just like, all right, man, you gotta calm down. But I love the competitiveness. Yeah. I really, really like it. And it's the kind of thing that's like, all right, well, you got better throughout the year at Ignite. You are a winning player on paper if this all comes together. It just needs to happen. And it feels silly to bet against a guy who's like productive in doing these things in a pro league when he was 18 for most of the season. Like, he just turned 19.
Yeah, and there's a lot of value in that too. So it's really weird. Like, I just want to point this out. I'm sure the listeners can already make this parallel. It's weird how you're a Miller guy and I'm a Sissoko guy, but when we talk about why we like our guys so much, like how much you say about Miller, I say kind of the same thing about City.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's kind of like we're splitting apart Siamese twins almost, you know, between both of these guys. It's like both could be really successful. It's just which player type, I guess, are you buying more? But for there are so many similarities that it's like, why do we see such a divergence between where we both have each one respectively?
Yeah, I think with City, my thing is just I worry a little bit more about the habits, and I worry a little bit more about not necessarily like the playmaking, because I think he's a better like playmaker and reader of the floor than Leonard. I just worry about like how basically just like his coordination, like the fact that the ball comes loose, the handle goes in traffic. He is like a really handsy defender who gets in foul trouble a lot, and he's not a very good finisher at this point. And again, like I've said like three times in this episode now, the guys who get better at finishing are the guys who are big and athletic. Like, I don't think that's going to be that way forever, but I don't love his touch inside the arc, which is odd because I do kind of buy his jumper.
Yeah.
But I don't love his floaters. I don't love his touch at the rim if it's not a dunk. But he's probably going to get a lot of dunks because he is really damn big.
and that's why I like him at the four, right? Like, a lot of the stuff that you're pointing out against him is like, I would care more about those things if I saw him as like that, like perimeter based player, but I don't really look at him in that light. And that's why I look at him like as a four. And I just see so many like unique ways that he could be an advantage to a team. But in the same breath, it's not like I'm advocating him to be super high up boards. I just, like, he's a personal favorite of mine because of
how probably go in the first, and like a lot of places don't have him there.
Yeah, and I have him at like 20, like 23 to 25, like somewhere in that neighborhood. I'm still trying to nail down positions, but 23 to 25, like Maxwell, you and I both, like we love our 117th prospect on our board.
Yeah,
like
we
love everybody, right? I think the way that why he's one of the favorites of mine is like I feel like I look at him through like a almost like different lens positionally than like the consensus has nailed him down.
That's
and fair. Yeah, and I enjoy his game so much. And again, like the competitive, like the reasons you love Miller is why I love Sissoko, because he's filthy. He's like he's an energizer bunny.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Shout out to Charles Bediako, by the way, number 117 on my board.
I think I have him at like last I looked, because I was reading
higher. Yeah,
I was reading yours and Nathan's article. I think I have him at like late 90s, like I think like 97, 99, like somewhere in there. Yeah. And I was like, shout out to you guys, because y'all just wrote an incredible piece, and I read his name in there. I was like, my guy, you know?
Yeah, that was a Nathan one. Nathan took Bediako for that piece. But yeah, I think you're onto something with how you view CD positionally, though, right? Because like if CD is a four, then how much is he handling the ball? Like, and then like the fouling stuff, I don't know. Like, is it going to be things that he runs into when he's not guarding guys that are handling the ball as much? Yeah. Like a lot of it is just, it goes away. If you think he'd play the four, I'm interested to see how he measures, because I think his wingspan will play a big role in that. I don't know if his wingspan's already out there. It could be.
I'm not a big like measurements guy, and I know that's probably taboo in the draft space. Like, I just like can do stuff on the court, and like that's how I kind of look at him positionally at the four. I think that he can functionally be one.
Yeah, I think for me, it's more so just like I want to make sure he doesn't have like a 6'7" wingspan.
Oh,
like,
for sure.
I don't think he does, but like.
Like he's a T-Rex out there.
You have to be like Brandon Clark level bouncy if you have like a flat wingspan at that size.
Yeah.
That does it for your guys. Let's kind of get into parting words, because unfortunately we don't have you around here much longer. So I'm going to let you just kind of take the floor here.
Yeah. So this is I'm going to try to keep it together, man, because
you're fine, man. Do what you got to do.
Yeah. So Nathan wrote like, didn't ask for this, like it wasn't prompted, but like he's like, hey man, I can't make the show, and then like wrote this big long like basically thank you to me. And it's just it's so weird to be thanked for being on, you know, Draft Deeper, because like Nathan is Draft Deeper, like great as it is that like we get to be co-hosts with him, and like that's not like a suicide dig at myself or a knock on you or anything like that. It's just like I think Draft Deeper and like Nathan is in my head first.
It's
because
his podcast that we listened to.
Right. And I was actually listening to him on Chucking Dart. Shout out to Chuck. And they were like kind of crediting each other for coming up around the same time in the pandemic era. I was like, man, I've been listening to Nathan for a long time, and like now I get to be on a show with him. So shout out to him, because like he took bets on us, you know, No Ceilings as a whole took bets on us. And, you know, I'm glad that I get to be on the show with you in particular, Maxwell, because we did stuff. It's like when we were in the
Indies, we were like,
together.
Like, exactly. Like we're the two guys where it's like, all right, I think we both think we're pretty good. Let's see what we can do together. And
we're like Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So it's pretty cool that we get to be where we are, you know? And like, I did work with Nathan before when I was let off the ball, and it's just crazy, man. So, big shout out to Nathan. Love you like a brother, man. Maxwell, same to you. Love you like a brother.
For sure. You too. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, the No Ceilings family too. You know, it's crazy how much things have picked up this year. Like doing stuff that, and for the listeners, like this might be tacky, whatever. Like I would love for you to continue listening, but I get it if this is like not what you want to listen to anymore. But the amount of stuff that I've gotten to do this year is just insane. Like the people that I'm getting to talk to, the access to things that I'm getting to have now, it's just wild, man. You know, so like these like brief hiatuses that I have to take for my job, like it's just like a constant reminder to stay humble. You know what I mean? Because at any moment this stuff can be taken away, you know, it's just a dream, dude, that we're chasing down. And like, we're still in our infancy, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, there's like momentum and stuff like that. I'm not trying to like make our heads any bigger, but like, there's reasons to continue to be excited for everything that we have going, but I never want to lose this feeling of just being grateful, thankful, and humble, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as much as I hate my job sometimes because I have to leave you guys, and
it's
also really weird that like I'm gonna like I'm married and I have four kids, mm-hmm. so obviously number one, like
that's gonna
sting the most. Mm-hmm. But at second, it's really weird that like we have this No Ceilings Collective and this No Ceilings family, and like I miss you guys when I'm gone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, I haven't really hung out with anybody in person. Like, Corey's the only No Ceilings, you know, family member that I got to kick it with in person when we went to the Overtime Elite Pro Day. Shout out to the OTE. But like, I miss you guys, you know, and I'm excited for when I come back and I get to see like all the success that we've accomplished, like all the milestones that we've hit, you know, big things that we have to look forward to when I come back. And most importantly, I just want to thank the No Ceilings universe. You know what I mean? Like, because it's crazy to me that I have people that listen to me and care about my opinion sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a knucklehead, you know, like I'm a deviant. Like, there's nothing like I'm not, you know, a redeemable commodity. You know what I mean? But like, there are people that care enough to like talk with me, that reach out to me, that genuinely care about me and my well-being, that have that don't know me from Adam. You know, if they saw me on the street, they might not even connect my cartoon emoji to my actual human face. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
Shout out to the No Ceilings universe. Shout out to the No Ceilings family. Shout out to the Draft Deeper family, man. This is all just incredible, and I'm just thankful and grateful and humble to be here.
Yeah, well, if I can speak for myself and for, I'm sure, a lot of listeners, like, it's always a pleasure to like podcast with you. Like, we were doing this before we were at No Ceilings, right? Like, I obviously, like, I'm a fan of you and what you do. I just think it's been really cool. Like you mentioned, like, the stuff that we've gotten to do is like crazy. Compared to where we were like 2 years ago, like, we were just slapping together podcasts, hoping people would listen to them, writing like a joint Substack together, being like, is this a thing that we can do? Do we have like time to do that? And now, like, it's become a much bigger part of our lives. Like, it's like a constant thing that we think about like every second of every day. It's been such an honor to like be on this journey with you.
Yeah.
Because like, and this is getting to be like corny, I respect you as like a human being a lot, like knowing like the quality of human being that you are. Behind the scenes, knowing that you're somebody that I can always talk to and go to. But then in the basketball sense too, like, I feel like you made a really serious leap as an evaluator this year. Like, when you wrote like your Houston Millett piece before the season, I like texted Nathan on the side and I was like, dude, Steven's bringing it. Like, it was like one of those things where it's like, I feel like something that I'm really grateful for. And honestly, I feel like this, if you don't want to like listen to us talk about how good we all think we are, like, I get it. But like, I feel like one of the best things that we have going for ourselves as a team, and I feel like the whole draft space is starting to hit the point too, where like, for a while, it felt like there was not a lot going on in the NBA draft space online. Like, there was like good people, and then like they all kind of got hired by teams and went away. And there was like some people doing good work, but it was kind of scattered. It was all over the place. It wasn't consistent. But like, having people like you, like Corey, like Albert, like Metcalf, like Rucker, like everybody across the board on the
Page,
team, like, really,
Nathan, Page, Evan,
dude, paid like, all right, I'm trying not to like talk about how good everybody is. Paige is gonna be, I'm saying this right now, Paige is gonna be able to call her own shot and do whatever she wants to do.
Yeah.
In the basketball, in media, in whatever industry
she's a rock star
in 3 years. Paige is a killer. Like, Paige is phenomenal. But this is about Steven. And I think you got so much better at evaluating and just like thinking through things more thoroughly. And like, the work that you put in this year pushes everybody else to get better. And like, I just know that like, when I see your piece go up on Sunday and I see Nathan's go up on Monday, I know I have to bring it on Tuesday, because I don't want to be the guy that, if somebody just came to the website for a first time on a Sunday and saw what you put out, I don't want to be the person a couple of days later that makes them think they want to unsubscribe. So you've really set a high bar. And we're just going to miss you. Like, it's a pleasure to podcast with you. It's a pleasure to read your work. it's great to have you in the group chat. Like, you're always just such an upbeat, positive person, and just great to have around.
Yeah, man, I can't tell you how much those words mean to me, man. And just, you know, keep the mushy stuff going. I love you. Like, I'm genuine. Mm-hmm. Like, I love you guys, you know, mm-hmm. And it's
the community is awesome. And it feels like the community is becoming more and more positive too. Like, it feels like the draft space is a whole.
Yeah.
Is like the best it's been in a long time. Like, it feels like everybody's got their attitudes in a good place. Everybody's supporting each other. Everybody's lifting each other up. And like, everybody's putting out quality work. Like, this is the most quality work that I've seen in the draft space, like across the board, in a long time. It's a really good time to be in the weeds if you're a draft fan.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, you said that I echo the same sentiment with everybody. Like, Corey is just like a basketball wizard.
So good.
You know, Metcalf and Rucker, like the way that they can simultaneously like give like thorough analysis while also just like giving pop culture references and have just like the best time on earth. It's mind blowing to me. Nick, the amount of work that he does is
the editing. Oh my gosh. Like,
every day he's doing something.
Yeah.
Every day he's doing something to make No Ceilings a better place. And like, he reaches out to everybody on a one-on-one level, you know. Paige, she's the world is her oyster, man. She's a rock star. Mm-hmm. You know, Albert is, you know, the sweetheart amongst the group. Evan is just like the silent warrior who is just like, he's in on guys before everybody else. And it's just incredible. Like, how he knows like when a player is going to stick, you know. Mm-hmm. And I could sing praises on everybody, but I'm thankful, grateful, humbled to be here. And again, shout out to everybody that's listening to us, man. The No Ceilings universe is expanding rapidly, and I love it.
It's such a great community, and it's just so great to have everybody that listens. And yeah, I mean, they're all going to miss you as much as I will, and as much as Nathan will, and as much as everybody on the team will. So any final kind of closing words from you?
No, Scoot is the definitive number two prospect in this draft class. I don't care what anybody says moving forward. I know that you're going to, when I have to take my hiatus, I know that there's going to be more and more people tuning in. Just be ready, because there's going to be stuff that I'm not going to be a part. Like, you're going to hear my voice on like guest appearance on a couple podcasts before I go. Like, there's going to be one more piece before I go, but can't tell you guys how jealous I am that you guys are going to experience these things that I know that are coming in real time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That I'm already excited for, but I'm not going to get to experience it with everybody else. Like, you all are going to be excited at the same time. And that's going to be such a fun time to be in the No Ceilings universe. So just, you know, make sure that you're staying up to date on everything, because our posse is getting big and our posse is getting bigger, to quote the Beastie Boys. So just just stay tuned, subscribe on everything that Maxwell is going to tell you to. But for love sure. You guys. Thank you so much for the support. When I come back, I'm going to hit with the wheels running. You can write that down. You can guarantee that's going to be my first proclamation of the next year's draft cycle. Is that I'm only going to work harder.
For sure. Well, we can't wait for you to get back. Follow him on Twitter at Stephen G Hoops. Make sure you're following No Ceilings at No Ceilings NBA on Twitter. Subscribe to the Substack at NoCeilingsNBA.com. Subscribe to this podcast feed, the No Ceilings NBA podcast feed, on whatever app you listen to this on. Watch us on YouTube. Subscribe there. Rucker's making crazy videos every single day on different podcasts. So make sure you're following that. You can follow me on Twitter at Boundboards, at BAUM Boards on Twitter, and follow Nathan at Draft Deeper. Yeah. Thank you all so much for joining us, and we will see you all next time.
Much love, y'all.